Hello. Hello and welcome. My name is Jakob Gottlieb Svendsen, and I'm going to talk about an introduction to service management automation. But before we start, I should ask you some questions. For instance, how many of you have worked with service management automation before? All right. How many of you have never created a runbook in service management automation? Oh, that's good. Since it is an introduction, it's good that most of you haven't done it before. What about the graphical interface, the classic orchestrator? Anybody working with that? All right. So what I'm going to go through is take it from the beginning. I'm going to show you how to do a simple runbook and build it, build on the runbook, adding different features that you should know about in service management automation. First of all, I can present myself. I work for a company called the Cortec, and I work as a consultant slash developer. And in the keynote, they talked about the DevOps. Well, I've been a DevOps for the last 8 years, I think. It just didn't have a word until a few years ago. So what I do is I develop stuff for service for System Center, or I develop stuff for automation within the IT. Department. I also do training in these different categories. For instance, yeah, you can read it afterwards if you want to. I have these different courses that I do in PowerShell and so on. And maybe I should mention that we have created this group called PowerShell User Group in Denmark. So if any of you visit Denmark and like PowerShell, or move to Denmark for some reason and like PowerShell, then you should join our group. The PowerShell user group. So automation generally is pretty hard to say what should we use it for, but there is some categories which you will always start with the most customers, the most people will look at when they think automation. Of course, one of the main ones, one of the really great ones, is if you get some kind of alert in the middle of the night. And you really don't want your watch team to get up from bed and fix the problem, and then have it and then having to fix the problem manually. If we can have some kind of automation that can go in and, for instance, fix the problem temporarily, one really simple example could be that a server runs out of disk space. But what we can do really quickly is to delete some temporary files, for instance, and then we next morning, the normal team, instead of somebody in the middle of the night, can look at the problem. Of course, I'm not going to go into details with all of these, but there is a lot of different things that we might want to use automation for, especially when we talk about faster deployment times of new systems, of automatic remediation of errors, of maintenance tasks. That can be a lot of different stuff. Not going to spend so much time on that part. When you open the admin portal for Windows Asia Pack, then you'll see this menu that I have. Actually, I should have put it on the other side, maybe. It's the different parts of Windows Asia Pack. And one of them is called automation. And this is the tab that I'm going to talk about today. It is a system where you can, by using Orchestrator, the different components in the Orchestrator, you can install an engine that can run your automation. The automation will be written in what's called the PowerShell workflows. And this means that the knowledge that you already have, or you already have some colleagues or any kind of resource in your company that knows PowerShell, can pretty simply start using this automation. And now this one shouldn't go this far away. It has a browser-based editor. I'm going to show later some other ways of editing your runbooks, but there is a built-in editor, which I'm going to show you in a second. Of course, we have always been able to run scripts. Any kind of scripts, it could be VB scripts, PowerShell scripts, but most of the time when you ask somebody at some company, they say, oh, we have a lot of scripts running. Okay, where are they running? Oh, at some computer somewhere. We don't really know exactly which computer runs which automation, and we don't really know exactly when they run or if it was run properly, or it can be really hard to have a nice overview of all this stuff. And by using a central place to be able to run everything from, you can very easily get a nice overview of what have run okay and what have failed and which automation exists. And SMA actually enables us to do that. It enables us to scale and to make it redundant so that we always know that our scripts will run. We'll not just rely on one single server. We can have 100 servers responsible to run this code. This automation. The good thing about it being PowerShell is that we can import already made modules. It could be your own modules. It could be third-party modules. It could be modules from any kind of system. We can import them into the system and use them directly. So when you want to start this, start using SMA, there is a lot of good stuff to find on the Building Clouds blog. It's called, there's the link here, it might be a little hard to see, but you can download the slides afterwards. Otherwise, just search for the Building Clouds blog. This link here will get you to an introduction to SMA, which will explain a lot of stuff. Let me show you the first part. If I go into the Windows Asia Pack, and I switch to automation. You see, by default, I get this overview of which runbooks has run, which runbooks has failed, which runbooks has completed successfully. So I can actually remove some of these here, so we can see only the ones we want. So that day I had 4, which is my record of completed runbooks. So you might see this is a development environment. I have a lot of failed stuff in here. I can go down here and you can see which of the runbooks has actually run, the different jobs. For instance, I've tried to run a sample here. We have run some notification. We have some another runbook called test, which I tried earlier today. If I go into runbooks, you'll see all the runbooks in here. And actually, I forgot to delete this one. I'll just delete it. I can really easily remove stuff if I want to. I can very easily create a new one. If I want to create a new one, I'll just click the plus down here, and I can go in and say, like, I can create any website or cloud or virtual machine cloud or a SQL server. I can actually create a runbook. This runbook will be called new. SEO website. So what I'm going to create is just a small runbook that will create a website. It will create a folder for a website. It will copy some content to this folder, and it will create the website in Internet Information Services. That's the basic idea of this runbook. I can just type a description, and I can type a tag. I'll just tag it demo in this case. So what you see here is that my runbooks in here is the different has different tags. So what I could do out here was to, for instance, type demo, and it will show all the runbooks that has this tag. So instead of putting them in different folders, forgetting where they are, maybe you sometimes want a runbook to be in multiple folders. Well, you can do that by using these tags. So you tag them in the category or whatever you want. In this case, I'll just tag it demo so I can easily find it again. If I click into the runbook itself, I can see stats for the specific runbook. Of course, there is none so far because I haven't created the runbook yet. I haven't run it yet. So what I can do with this runbook is, first of all, I can see the dashboard. I can see the jobs, which has, of course, there is no jobs. I can also go to author, and this is where I can actually edit my runbook. So the runbook, in this case, it says I have no published version, because the thing is that we actually have 2 versions of each runbook. One is a draft, which we can edit, we can test it, we can run it, we can make sure it works, and when we are sure it works, and when it's out of, for instance, normal business hours, we can then publish the runbook and actually put it and replace the one that was already published before. So if I go to draft, you'll see I have a run book here. So a run book was actually, or is actually, a PowerShell workflow. So this is just standard PowerShell, and it says a workflow. This is, has been added for us from the beginning. And what I can do here is standard PowerShell stuff. For instance, I can create a parameter block where I can put in parameters for my run book. In this case, what I really want is computer name to where should I put the website. I want the website name. This name I will use, of course, for the website in Internet Information Services, but also for the folder name that it's going to be put in. And then I want the website port also, so I could actually put it on a different port than 80. But in this case, website port, in most of the cases, I really want it just to be on port 80. So what I do is to add this equals 80. And this means if I don't define, when I start the runbook, if I don't put any value into this, it will then use the value I've written there. Again, this is standard PowerShell parameters. Of course, if you haven't done any PowerShell before, it can be a little tricky, this part. So the first step I want to do is to create a directory. And just to show that you can still use the old aliases from DOS, I'll just use the mkdir to create the site. What I really want is to have a backslash, and then I'll insert the computer name where I want the website. I'll go to c$inetpub, and in this, the Internet Information Services folder, I'll create a folder that's called the same as the website. But as you can see, it actually helps me to finish what I was typing, so I can actually see that I don't type anything wrong. This is the first part of the runbook, and I'm going to go and test it. What I can do is to save it, which will save this draft into the database, and I can then test it and run it. So when I test it, you'll see that I will be asked for a computer name. We'll use the domain controller. That's the good demo machine. And I'll call it something, SCU pretest 1, and I'm not going to put in any website port. What happens now is it will be marked in the database. I'll go through the architecture a little bit later in the session. It will be marked in the database, and one of these runbook workers, as they are called, will grab the job and actually start it. And if I go into the... to the actual folder, we should see. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's my very... you are more awake than me, because I actually made an error. And this is why you should never code stuff live. But again, it is more fun if we code it live. What I actually did was to insert the website port. So what I got was a nice folder called 80, which you'll see here. So it actually worked, but it put the wrong name. Of course, that's why we have the tester. So we'll just put the website name instead. Let me go back to the slides, and I'll go back to this runbook throughout the session. The PowerShell workflows, which we're going to use. There was a lot of you who already, and actually I didn't ask how many of you are using PowerShell or have been working with PowerShell. Oh, that's good. I mean, when I started teaching PowerShell in 2007, there was not so many people putting up their hands. There was not even any students for the courses, you know. But now it seems that a lot of people have taken PowerShell and used it, also because it is necessary. So in PowerShell, we have something called a function or a commandlet, which are commands we can run. Workflows are exactly the same. We can just create a PowerShell workflow. So within our code that we write, it'll actually look similar to any other PowerShell script or command. But when we run a PowerShell workflow, it is actually compiled into what's called the Windows Workflow Foundation workflow. This means that any errors, for instance, if we have a typo in a command name in the end of our script, will get noticed because it checks everything. It also means that not all PowerShell commandlets actually work in a PowerShell workflow. They do work, but they don't work directly in a flow. The reason for that is, of course, that it needs to convert it into this workflow foundation. But the reason for doing that is that we have a few advantages compared to a normal PowerShell script. First of all, these workflows, they can execute in parallel or in sequence. A normal PowerShell script, unless you do like really advanced PowerShell scripts, will run in sequence mode, so you can run one command at a time. Workflows, you can actually enable it to run on 100 commands at the same time, or connect to 100 machines at the same time. Well, you can do that in PowerShell too, but in workflows, you can much easier enable these parallel actions. It can persist state, and persistence of state is really important in this highly available, scalable structure that or engine that we are using. Because what happens if one of these workflows fails for some reason? It can either be the server that's running it crashes or is shut down, or there is some kind of error in our runbook. It can actually suspend the runbook and put it back into the database, and you can check it the next day and say, okay, oh, that was because I forgot to start some other service that it was relying on, for instance. And then you can restart your runbook, and it can actually continue from the point that it reached. This means that even though you have 200 servers that can run this code, these PowerShell workflows, they can actually, if they fail, put them back into a central store, and then any other server can finish the job later on. So as I said, it can actually suspend and then resume a workflow, which means, of course, that when we have errors, of course, there will be some kind of errors in automation, mostly human errors. It could be that a server was shut down where it had to copy the file to, for instance. The Active Directory was down. Well, it doesn't happen that often, but it could happen. This also means that workflows can survive a shutdown, so you can actually restart. You can actually have a workflow running on a computer, then restart the computer, and then have the workflow continue after the restart. So this is much more persistent and much more stable than running standard PowerShell scripts. The thing is that not all commandlets work directly and using these functions, because it runs what's called activities. This means that many PowerShell commandlets, or the built-in ones, they work directly because they are also made to support running as an activity. But all the commandlets that doesn't, we can actually run anyway by using an inline script block. I'll show you that in just a second. So, for instance, the next step I want to do here is to create the website itself. And the website uses a commandlet called new website. And if I don't know that, I could actually go in and click insert, and I can insert an activity, and I can actually browse what I have available in the current list of modules in my system. So then this one called web administration has one called new website, and I can then click next, and I can actually see which of the parameters that this command has. And if I click OK, it'll actually be inserted in here with all its commands. But in my case, I don't want all these different stuff. What I want is I want to specify where, and I want to specify the name, and also the port, of course. It changed the layout. I'll copy that one. And you see, I can actually go in and select from a different. If I can't remember exactly how the command was, I can then go in here. Without inserting it, I can then go in and just check it, just like using a manual. And we can see, yes, it was called port here. I'll just close that. You see, there is these square brackets here in PowerShell language. That means that these are optional. But the ones that don't have these square brackets around them means they are required to make the website. So in this first one, it wants a text string in the name. I'll replace that to the website name variable. And then the path itself, well, this is a website that will be created on a machine that has this folder created. But in this case, the folder is actually local because it runs, will this command will be running on the specific machine. Whoops. So it will look something like this. And then the port, I can finally use my website port here. So, but as I said before, not all commands work in a PowerShell workflow. In some cases, if I ran this now, to save time, I won't. But if I ran it, it will say, oh, new website doesn't work in a workflow as an activity. So what I need to do is to put it inside what's called an inline script block. Inline script. And I can open here, and I can then close it afterwards. Like that. The inline script block is exactly the same as if you were starting a PowerShell command prompt. So this means at this point, it will actually start a PowerShell exe, and it will actually run this PowerShell just as any other PowerShell script. This means that anything that happens in between here cannot support resuming. If something failed in here, it would have to restart the inline script block itself and not from within here. Another thing is that these inline script blocks actually work with a parameter called psComputerName. And actually, if you read a bit more about PowerShell workflows, you'll see that there is about 50 or 60 of these command these parameters which can be used on all activities in a workflow. So in this case, I can use the psComputerName parameter to actually make this script run on that specific computer. And inside this script, I can then handle it as it, since it's a local running command, so it will point to a local path, of course, and I don't have to think about adding computer name parameters to these commands in here. What I need to do is one thing, because since this is running on another machine and not inside our workflow itself, we actually need to add something to this. To these variables. It's the using construct. And the using, it actually tells the system to check before we start the inline script if these are available, and then transfer whatever values they have from this local runbook worker computer into the remote computer, which this triggered. Let's test that again. U2. Hopefully I didn't make any errors. Sorry? No, it's not colored. Yeah. Yeah, this part. Just a second. Just need to open this one. So it did actually use the correct code. It created the website called SCU2, and it also created the folder itself. There was one thing about the colors in here. It doesn't show that these actually are connected together like that, but it actually does work. I'm not sure if that was what you meant, but it does work. You could, of course, put it in quotes if you want to, like this. Might be a little prettier, but you should get used to that this editor sometimes tries to help. By, for instance, if you put a quote, it will make an extra one. So that's why I had to remove them before. So PowerShell Workflows has been there for a while, actually. It came in PowerShell 2.0, as far as I remember. Whoop. But the SMA actually enhances this by giving us an execution engine available. And that's why this system is so powerful, because we can have all our scripts in a SQL database, and we can have multiple servers that actually run the code. This means we have the centralized store for putting our scripts. But not only our scripts, because we can create stuff that's called variables, where we can insert, where we can save a value. We can either use the value in a script or in a workflow, or we can write the value in a workflow. We can put credentials in there, so you can very easily put specific service accounts into your scripts, which has been a problem for ages, that you couldn't save any credentials in a script because somebody might be able to read it. In here, you can actually put it encrypted into the data store and then use it. There's also something called connections, where we can make connections to different servers, for instance, Config Manager or Service Manager, and it helps us have an easy interface to create the connections with a specific service account and then reuse that later. I'll make a demo of this in the end of the session. We can also put certificates in there, so we can actually grab these certificates and use them in our workflows. Another thing is that it has something called schedules and actions. Schedules means that we can have a runbook triggered every day or every second day, or we want to run it every hour or every 5 minutes or every minute or something like that. The other one is actions, and it can actually trigger on events that happens in the Windows Azure Pack. So this means that if, for instance, somebody deletes a virtual network in their Windows Azure Pack portal, we can set it to trigger a specific runbook on that event. We can also save our modules, of course, our workflows, and also our checkpoints in there. Because what we can do in our inner workflow is to create checkpoints. So as I said before, it can resume, and it can suspend if it fails. It can resume from specific points. And these are the checkpoints that we can use for that. It also has some built-in versioning, which means, as I showed you before, we have a draft version, which we can check and test, and we have a published version, which is the one that would actually be run if anybody tries to run this runbook. So any changes can be properly tested before we publish it. And one very interesting thing for at least a lot of hosters and people who have developers in their company is that we have an OData web service which everything is controlled from. So this means you can easily create your own website, easily trigger it from your own website, easily trigger it from, for instance, a SharePoint workflow where you have like an InfoPath form, and with that sent, you can trigger some kind of runbook. Anything can be done within this web service. This also means that you can, for instance, from Excel, connect to the web service and get all your stats directly. And of course, we have all the stats in the database, so we have it available on the website or through the web service. So for instance, if I go to schedule, it says you must publish first, all right. So I publish it, and it will be saved as a published version, which would make it other people able to start this version of the runbook. We can then add a schedule. And the schedule, as you can see, it has one time or daily. And I'm pretty sure that they work on more options in later versions. I could also go to the VM clouds, for instance, where I have one cloud. And in the automation list here, I can actually link an action with a runbook. And that was what I was talking about before, that, for instance, if... Oh, here we go. I was a little bit too quick there. If a VMM, Virtual Machine Manager, VM network, is deleted, then I want to run a specific runbook. You'll see here that I actually only have one runbook to choose from. And the reason for that is that it will only show runbooks that has a specific tag. So if you read on TechNet, you'll see that to be able to select them in this dropdown, your runbook should have the tag SPF. Let's look at which one I have here. And you see I only have one that has this tag. So by using these tags, we can also make it show in different locations. Of course, you could, if you created your own interface, your own website, you could use these tags to list a specific list of runbooks for some specific people. So they are very useful. In assets, we have all the connections. For instance, one that I'm going to use later, let me search, called robot server, which is the standard connection. Type is called the management service admin. It's a standard management connection for in SMA. And in this connection, they have the option to write a computer name or IP address, a username, and a password. And from in my runbook, I can then grab this information and use it. And another cool thing here in when you start using SMA is that to be able to see how that works, there is a lot of samples already in there. All these samples that you'll see, how to connect to Config Manager, how to do this and that, they are there. So standard actions like getting a connection is very easy to find and just copy paste from in here. Yep. Here we go. So when we installed SMA is a part of Orchestrator. So since Orchestrator R2, we have this new part of the, if you see the installation splash screen here, we have this service management part of it. There is the web service, which was the web service to connect to and do, which it uses to execute everything and to get all the information and to transfer information between the portal and the database. It uses the web service. We have the runbook workers, which we use to execute the runbooks. We have the PowerShell module, which you can install on any machine, so you can easily connect to your SMA environment and start your runbooks. So if you have any kind of system that supports running a command line, could be scheduling systems, could be any kind of monitoring solution, you could then have a command line use this module to trigger a specific action. And then we are, of course, inside the admin portal in our WAP, in our Windows Azure pack, we need to connect the portal to the SMA service by using the register function in there. Let me show you the setup. As I said, the OData service is the central point of this system. It uses it. Everything goes through the web service. The service management portal, which is the Windows Azure pack, then connects to this web service and say changes, creates runbooks or whatever action we do. When we save a runbook that we have created in our editor, it then gets saved into the central data store. And the central data store, of course, has every information that you'll need. Every information about the setup, except the computer names and where the web service is located, where the database is located, of course. Everything is in that database. So you can easily have it always on, or you can do any kind of clustering or whatever you want. Of course, if you want to, the web service can also be load balanced, so you can have multiple of these. You can actually find good articles about that on the Building Clouds blog. So when we trigger a runbook that it should start, then we have the runbook workers, which can be any number of servers that can actually run the code. So they will go in and check the database, hey, is there any jobs that I need to trigger and run, and it will run those. And in the classic orchestrator, what happened was that you also have multiple runbook servers, but there was one main server and then the other was secondary. So the main one would fill up first, and then the other ones would take the rest of the jobs. In the runbook workers in SMA, it's a load balanced situation. So that means that they will, if you have two, they will take approximately 50% each. So each of the jobs will actually be assigned to one of these workers, which means that if you have 100 of them, you will be able to get a lot of executions through the system. And as I said, this is a part of Orchestrator. So without installing any Windows Asia pack, these parts are already there. So if you want to create your own portal, your own website to use for the web service, you can actually do that without the use of Windows Asia pack. If you want to install the minimum setup of Windows Asia pack so that you can use the automation function, for instance, this could be, there's a lot of people who want to utilize this new automation, but they are not really ready yet to start with the rest of the Windows Asia pack. In this case, you only need what's called the admin API and the admin portal, and then the orchestrator parts. And in minimum, you could put it on two servers. The execution part of orchestrator is the web service and the runbook workers and so on, and these are the important ones to be able to execute the code. But of course, the portal will be the interface that you will use to connect and to start them manually. Again, there is a link here that you can check to have the, there is the TechNet description of the different recommended setups. This is the absolute minimum. Yep. So if I want to use a checkpoint in my runbook, again, we go here, I can search for it. I go to author and I go to my draft version. Now that I have published it, it will ask me to edit the runbook and it will open it for edit. What I could actually do here is insert the commandlet, or the activity in this case, called checkpoint workflow. This means that it will create the folder, and it will then try to connect to the machine and create the website. If the website somehow fails in the creation, it will actually suspend at this point. When I then resume it again, it will start from this line number 11. So this is very easily to implement different states of your runbook. A very good example for that is, of course, when you create a new employee, you create the user in Active Directory, but you didn't really notice that there was a maintenance window on the Exchange server. So the next step where you create the email account itself then fails. And if we have a checkpoint between these, we can very easily continue from the Exchange step instead of restarting the runbook. If we don't have any checkpoints described in here, it will then restart the runbook from the beginning when we resume the runbook. So if we want to use it together with Service Manager, like we were using the classic orchestrator, for instance, you can choose to buy the Cyrosun SMA connector, which can be used to trigger, actually you saw it in the keynote, that Travis, he triggered a runbook from the service manager. And if you use this connector, you can easily implement your runbooks as you would with your old classic orchestrator runbooks. You can also see in this chart that everything is built on the Windows Workflow Foundation, which then has PowerShell on top, which then have the service management automation routine, and then the web service API. And as I said, this web service API can be used for any action. So if you want, you can create your own editor, you can create anything you want, and you can easily trigger it from your own code. You can also, by using the web service, trigger it from your classic orchestrator. So if you have your graphical authored runbooks and you want to create some PowerShell runbooks in SMA, you can then use these web service, orchestrator's web service and SMA's web service to trigger each other. And again, there is a link here. Might be a little hard to see in that color, but it describes how to do these things. And of course, these slides will be available afterwards. So if we look at the advantages over classic orchestrator, we have 64-bit support because it's running a native 64-bit environment. We have native PowerShell execution, so this means any PowerShell version is supported. If the operating system runs PowerShell 4, then you have PowerShell 4 in your runbooks available. We can do these checkpoints. If you see my session tomorrow about classic orchestrator runbook design, you'll see that this can be done in Orchestrator 2, but we cannot do it as simple as you can here. The runbook service architecture, I talked about the load balancing. We can have the draft versions. And we can actually have different versioned runbooks. Because we can do any actions through this web service, we can easily combine it with the Team Foundation server. And if you are interested in that, you can view the Building Clouds blog, which has a series of blog posts that talks about how to integrate with Team Foundation server. So if anybody checks something into Team Foundation server, it then gets transferred to SMA and published in there. You can schedule it directly, and you can do the parallel processing inside the runbooks. But we need to write the text PowerShell compared to using the Visual Designer, which had some advantages, but again, when you do more complex work, then the graphical designer becomes a little disadvantage comparing to writing the code. Again, it depends on which kind of customer, which kind of company that you are and what you need to use it for. There is a blog post that describes how to move from Orchestrator, classic Orchestrator, to SMA. It has a little utility that can help you convert your runbooks. It'll try to write the logic for you, and you can then insert the right commandlets and activities manually. There's also a blog post that describes about how to do this connection between two systems. And again, this tool that will help us convert. When you do these runbooks in SMA, there's a few things that you should know, think about. First of all, you should check out this introduction. And actually, in the end of my slides, I have a new wiki link that our friend Ryan Andorfer released a couple of days ago. It has a lot of tips and tricks on what to do and what not to do when authoring these runbooks. It's a very nice guide. Use tags so you can find your stuff again. Instead of giving the runbook a name or something that you can find it on, a category, write that in a name, don't do that. You should write it in a tag, for instance, if it's an exchange or whatever it is. You should insert logging, and you should insert progress. I'll show you this in just a second, how you do that. And the last thing, and very important thing, is that they should be atomic. And by atomic, I mean they should be able to run on any server. You should not, for instance, rely on a script that is placed on a specific server somewhere. No, because if you rely on that script that you try to trigger, then you have a single point of failure. You should create runbooks that run stuff in PowerShell or trigger local actions like executables on the runbook worker itself. And of course, if you want to trigger these executables or PowerShell scripts on the workers, you have to deploy the files on all your runbook workers and not just one of them. Yep. So the last thing I want to add here is a progress and show you the options for logging. And they are actually really nice. I can write a command called write progress, starting, for instance. I can then write here, folder successfully created. And I can, in the end, for instance, write the this is the end, like that. One thing I forgot to add here was the copy item, and it, just to save time, I'll just copy it from in here. Oops, I also forgot to add it there. Copy item. Nope, sorry. We'll just do it like this. So now I have this progress added, and this means that when somebody writes this, runs this runbook, I'll just publish it and show it to you. So now it's published, hopefully without any errors. If I run this runbook, what happens now, as I said, is that it's put into the database as a job, and the job will then wait for some runbook worker to pick up the job. It will start the job, and I can actually see it here. You see now it's running, and go in here and see now it's completed. I thought I typed 3, but I accidentally typed the same name. I'll just show you that in a second. Computer name, like this. Now it's just started another job, and we can take a look at the job that ran here. It says it already exists, the place I put the folder. Again, the other one is running. You can actually see in here when it was started, when it was ended, and the inputs too. In here, we can see the output of the runbook itself. So this is kind of what you would see in PowerShell. If I go to the History tab, we can actually see each part of them. But you don't see any progress here because I haven't enabled it. So the idea is that you can put in these progress things that I just put in, and then you can later go in and actually enable the progress records. So for instance, you can also write debug records or verbose records, which is usually, you know, troubleshooting and then developer troubleshooting, what you would call the other, the verbose records. Then you can have this in your runbooks, and if anything fails one day and you can't figure out why, you can then enable the logging so that you don't have all logging put into the database all the time. Sorry? It's yeah, I see your question that you really want to show like a percentage of how far it had reached. Problem is, it's really hard to decide how many percentage each command. So built in, there is nothing to do that. But you would be able to yourself, for instance, to write progress for each step, and then write now action number 1 out of 10 finished, for instance, and action 2 out of. But you don't have a progress bar in that way, no. Whoops. Now I saved it, and now I can start it again. like that. Now it will run the same code as before, but I will get the progress steps in the history. Not yet, because it's currently running. And you can actually see when I enable progress, I get each command that is run. And I also get my own progress, which is these folders successfully created, for instance. And if you have some run workflows running in your production, what sometimes happens when you have code running is that someday it fails. Of course, it probably fail one day. But sometimes the hard thing is to know which version of the actual code ran that day. I mean, if you change the code often, it's really easy to be able to see what did exactly run in this job. So when you select one of these progresses, you can actually click View Source, and you can then see how the runbook looked like the day the execution that failed. Oh, or this execution that is successful, of course. Yep. There we go. So the last thing I want to show is, first of all, I just want to mention how you can develop your runbooks. You can do it in the portal, as I showed you, in the web-based console, which means that you can exit it from anywhere, your iPad or Surface, of course, or any tablet or whatever, your mobile phone. But you can also do it in the PowerShell ISE. If you're used to using the built-in PowerShell editor, the ISE, well, you can easily write workflows in there. The problem is, if you write a workflow in the ISE, you don't have access to all your assets, like the connections and the credentials and so on. So what Joe Levy from the VAP team, or the SMA team, has made and released it on TechNet Gallery is something called the Emulated Automation Activities module. So if you run this module before you start coding, you can actually use the same commands to go into a SMA and get all these credentials and so on, and actually use them directly in your editor. The last thing you can do is there's actually been released a free editor that can connect to SMA, you can connect, and you can browse your runbooks and your assets and so on, and you can actually write your runbooks in here, you can check them in, you can publish them or run them. Only thing you can't do in here is to see exactly the stats and so on for the jobs. But it's a really nice tool, and it's free and it's open source. So the final thing I have is that it's really easy to import, export both runbooks, runbooks and modules. There's actually also released a helper tool on the Built-in Clouds blog that has that can actually import, export your runbooks automatically. So therefore, you can easily every night, for instance, export a copy of your runbooks. You can also very easily import other runbooks or modules. So what I want to do just as fun in the end is, just a second, is that I have this little robot here that I, since I'm from Denmark, I like Lego, of course. And this little robot has a connection here, a Wi-Fi connection. And it's actually connected to my computer here. I just need to start it just a second. Start the Wi-Fi. Just a second. Of course, it seems a little bit stupid to just use a Lego robot as a demo, but what I want to show is that it's really simple to have pretty complex code written by someone like PowerShell script that can connect to this and use this robot, and then use it very simple. It's very simple to use inside SMA. There we go, almost ready. unfortunately cannot automatically join networks. But the thing is that inside your VAP and your SMA in here, you have an import button down here. It can import any PowerShell script, any PowerShell workflow. Just put it here. And we can then reuse that inside our runbooks. So I could, some colleague could ask me, or some customer can ask me, hey, can you automate this robot? And of course I can do that. Actually, I was so lucky that the actual connection to the robot is already made by some developer and released on CodePlex. You can actually read my blog if you want information about how exactly to do this. But I've then created a runbook. Let's check the network is okay. Yes. And the runbook, I just need to import it. Then I need to publish it before I can use it. So here it is. Runbook is, this is the runbook that actually makes the robot run. It's pretty advanced for somebody who's not used to PowerShell. I'll just publish it. Then I can go back into my website demo. And I can actually insert this as the last step. So the idea is then that it creates the website, then it triggers the robot to drive a little bit and then drive to the direction that you are sitting in. And that would be left. So what I can do here is to insert a runbook using the GUI. In here, I can select my robot. That's this one. And actually, the robot workflow only has one parameter, says which direction do you want to turn. So that's left or right. Really not that hard. And that will then be left. And I can then test the runbook here. Let me just do an extra check of the... It's because I'm using my mobile phone as a wireless network. There we go. Final test. We can... Yes. So what happens now is that the runbook is run just the same way as before. Of course, there is a little bit delay before the runbook is starting. It has to be picked up by the runbook worker. It has to run and create the website, which only takes maybe a second. And then it has to trigger the robot, which is not the fastest robot in the world. So it usually takes about a minute before it starts, which should be fairly soon. But again, it's just to show you can do anything you want with this. So now it's running. Only thing that could break it if there's too many wireless networks. There we go. Oh, the battery is dead. So, that's it for the robot. So as you can see, I used it really simple. It was one command and just the direction. So you could have anybody give you a workflow and then reuse it. And the only thing I have left here is just a list of this, the related sessions. Actually, I'm not in the program for Ask the Experts, but I'll be there later today anyway. If you want to ask me any questions, of course, you can ask me in a second too. And there is a lot of sessions about using SMA and more advanced stuff in SMA. There's even so many that I can't mention all of them, but I'll just go back to the slide in a second so you can see it. The last thing is just that there is also some links, for instance, for the guide that I talked about and for my blog that you can get from the slides. And then, of course, any feedback you should use the planning tool or the application. And of course, you are welcome to ask me any questions after this, mostly about SMA, of course, but after this session. But other than that, thank you.